This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, Master of the Web, Lady Dawn of House Wright, Sir Chris of House Farber, Lady Tracy of House Faw, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys and Lady of Jameson, Lord John of House Fry, Lady Juliana of House Stradley, Sir David of House Fraser, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry, Lady Madeline of House Fritzel, Lady Adrian of House Dillard, Lady Ashley of House Gardner, Lady Lismelin of House Morales.
This episode of Bend the Knee is protected by Sir Ryan of House Turbush, Lady Sarah the Unraveler.
Our current champion is Lady Kira of House Arnold.
Our current Master of Coin is Lord Jason of House Ross.
Squire to Sir Matt, Lady Betsy of House Hudson.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Arya 10 of A Clash of Kings. And in our Raven, we will be talking about Rhaenys. We're going to be talking about possibly the colors black and green, some symbolism. We might even talk about Sir Loras Tyrell today.
Is he faking it?
Is he?
He might be.
Hey, he might be. I think he might be. So we'll talk about that for sure.
Awesome. Ez, hey man, how is Germany treating you? You're still over there in Germany. You coming back in a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, coming back in 2 weeks. Calling a great council for one of our other projects, Hyperspace Hangout. If anybody wants to get involved in that, we're doing a Council of Elders book club over there, doing some discussion on Thrawn, Heir to the Empire. So look forward to that September 10th, I believe. That's going to be on a Friday. I'll be back by then. Real quick before we dive in here, I major shout out to some of my friends here in Germany, just very, very quickly. Sir Matt, they're taking care of me over here, okay? They have me smoking cigars, drinking some scotch, drinking and pumping, eating good meat. So to my good friends, last night we had a big party. Rodrigo and Eric, the boys. I cannot wait for them to come to the States and for them to meet Sir Matt. We were talking just listening to the music around the fire, just having a good time, and it was epic, man. They're like into muscle cars from the United States. They want to come in and travel. And we're just talking about all these different things. It reminded me of like a couple of hedge knights getting around, like coming together by the fire and sharing their drink and their meat and telling stories. And I was like, let's go. So shout out to those guys.
Nice, man. That sounds good. Yeah. That sounds fun. Germany's cool. Yeah. Is it reset? It's raining over there.
Yeah, it's raining. It's been kind of crazy. It's been kind of cold. I don't know what Portland's all over the place. I don't even want to, you know.
Well, it's been really hot, but today's kind of chilly. I don't know what's going on. It seems like winter is coming, my friend.
Holy, no, because last week I did an episode. You remember we're in this nine hour kind of time gap. And so I did an episode for us when we had our Bannerman hangout. I went to Scotland. And what did I do? It was the magic system basically in A Song of Ice and Fire. So that, where was I going with that? I don't even remember. What was I?
I don't know, man.
Where was I going with that? You just said something about,
I said winter is coming.
Well, and I said in that episode, thank you. I said in that episode that the breaking news is that winter is coming no time soon. Like the book is, there's not a chance it's coming anytime soon. I could say that, you know, with a surety. So that was all the news we had last week. I don't know if there's any new news this week, but I'm guessing I could say this on a weekly basis, right? Breaking news, the Winds of Winter will not be out anytime soon.
There's a little bit of Game of Thrones news here. I have not a blog pulled up, and George says that Random House is officially making a new edition of Fire and Blood. It is now coming to paperback, so you can get it mass market paperback of Fire and Blood, which is actually pretty cool. Fire and Blood is actually, I still sort of prefer World of Ice and Fire to Fire and Blood.
Yeah.
Because they're pretty similar, and a lot of Fire and Blood contains several, several pieces of what's in World of Ice and Fire, as well as some of the other novellas you can find in random books.
Right.
But Fire and Blood's pretty cool. It has some really, really interesting artwork in there that's all really done. It's all in black and white, and I kind of like it. So, yeah, if you haven't picked it up yet, now you can grab it in paperback, which I think is, the hardcover's cool, too. But I don't know. I'm not really somebody where hardcover books. I just don't really like to read hardcover books.
No, they're just they're simply to put on the shelf and hope that one day you run across the author and he signs it for you. I mean, that's really what.
Seriously.
I will say, though, in our Heroes of the Horn podcast, I do sometimes pull out the hardback because they're just, it's bigger and it's hard to find. Sometimes when the book is too big, I need those, like, I need a big, I'm not, I mean, Sir Ezra's a little old, okay? And my eyesight's going, right? So I need that big text so I can look in there and highlight and make my notes and all that kind of stuff. So that's nice. I actually wouldn't mind picking up a paperback version because we're going to have some content coming out soon with House of the Dragon. We're going to be in there reading more about the characters in Fire and Blood, making connections. So that's good because you don't like to mark up your hardback version, your hardcover version. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, it's just, you can't really put it in a book bag or, like a bag. And then sometimes you get the ones where it's like the cover will just come off. Like it's not like, taped in or sealed in there. And it's like, I'll throw them away if they're not like that. Just like I'll throw the cover away.
Wow.
Like, this is dumb. I know. I'm sure there's literally people just being like, are you kidding? So I do Kindle, to be honest, because I actually love my Kindle, or like you get a Kindle Fire, or I have like a tablet. And I got to say, I'm getting really into with my tablet here, reading comics and graphic novels. I've actually been looking through, and I have some of the Hedge Knight comics, but I've been doing more and more with it because you get a big, nice screen and you can have your books on here. I mean, obviously when it comes to really reading books, I like the audiobook, but with Kindle, you can, if you have the audiobook and the Kindle, it'll read it for you and it'll like go along the lines. And I've found that I really, really like that because right now I've been reading the Witcher books. And so I'm actually like doing that where I'm like watching, like reading it and listening to the audiobook at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, those are cool. I mean, Matt, who's the guy? You ever seen a kid walking around a college campus with a backpack full of just hardcover? Hardback books. I mean, I'm sorry.
I mean, look, right here, I have the Knight of Seven Kingdoms, which is my favorite Game of Thrones story, right? And look, I mean, it's a beautiful cover. But you know what? As I've never read it like this ever.
Yeah, I know.
Ever. And it's got great illustrations and everything.
Yeah.
Is there, I don't know if there is a paperback version, but I'm sure there is.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably, I think this is because they have them in separate, like you just bought the Hedge Knight and then I don't know, actually.
Yeah. It just sits on my shelf and then I pull it out and look at it once every while.
Isn't that great though? Isn't that great?
It kind of,
it's like, I like to walk around. So I'm in Germany right now, but when I'm back and you guys see on the video version or on YouTube, I love to just walk around my little room there, pull something off the shelf, look at it for 5 seconds and think, yeah, just brings back the feels. And you just think about a land far away or whatever, being a hedge knight out just roaming around. God.
Yeah. Okay. All right. As well, little announcement here. Okay. Attention to all you listeners across the galaxy. Okay, all the way from Australia to Houston, Germany. Do we have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with the fourth generation brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job with the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20.
Yeah, guys, when you order this, you're literally scheduling an actual liftoff here. So the spaceship is here to guide you on a journey to trim your body, balls, butt, and even Uranus. Okay.
Well,
I
mean, wow.
It's kind of redundant, but like, I mean, it is what it is. So, you know, we're getting nitty gritty here. I mean, yeah, we're just
real.
Sometimes you got to get in there, man. It gets a little crazy down there.
Hey, man, the shears that guard the realms of men, my friend.
Never gets old. It just never gets old.
All right. Hey, make sure to get 20% off plus free shipping with the code fansided20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code fansided20 at manscaped.com. For a clean trinity and beyond, your space balls will thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Ez. So, yeah, like we said, there's not really a lot of Game of Thrones news right now. Still just sort of waiting for... you know, House of the Dragon to come along. Nothing really new there. Just in a lull, a little bit of a game of Game of Thrones lull.
Yeah, and that's okay. I mean, like I said, I think I looked it up last week, and that's where I was like, hey, I mean, the one thing I'm sure about is Winds of Winter is not coming out in 2021. I would love to be so wrong on that, but I know that I'm so right. And yeah, it's just crazy. So maybe 2022, probably 2023. Who freaking knows? It's wins.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, man. We did get a rave, and by the way, someone saying that they appreciated us just, you know, doing the podcast and trying to keep them sane. Matt and I do it because we want to remain sane while we wait for the book as well. Okay, so that's also we're in this with you guys, trying to remain sane.
Hey, Olivia Cook here. You know who's going to be playing Alice at Hightower? In a recent interview, said that. You know, obviously these guys are held to, like, you know, the absolute most strict NDA, you know, like non-disclosure agreements. She described House of the Dragon as mind blowing.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I get you have to say that, but what?
Do you think it's gonna be better than Game of Thrones?
No, I'm actually worried that it's going to be good. It's going to be good, but I just don't know that it's going to be better. I mean, how do you top Hodor? How do you top Hold the Door? The Red Wedding and such. I mean, I don't know. I mean, again, for us, Hodor meant more because we had never witnessed it. So I'm hoping that they do things that we haven't seen in Fire and Blood that are just extras or... where George left room for the show to go tell a story down a dark alley or something, where we get to see who assassinated someone or plotting to maybe King Viserys was actually killed in some way. And it didn't go down the way that we think it goes down or something. And that's maybe the Hightowers have something to do with that. That would be shocking. I would be like, wow. Okay.
In this interview, she also said, remember there were some people asking her, it was a month or two ago, people were sort of asking her about it. And she said something along the lines of, like, oh, kind of taken aback at first about it. Because there was, like, you know, criticism with season 8 and stuff like that. So anyway, she goes on later in this interview with The Telegraph to say, I wouldn't feel comfortable in being a part of anything that just has egregious graphic violence towards women for no reason whatsoever, just because they want it to be tantalizing in a way that gets viewers. I don't think they'd be in their right minds to include any of that anymore.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. All right. I mean, that's so basically we're not going to have that. That's not going to happen. Basically,
it seems like what you're saying.
Like, but, she was assured that that's not going to happen. So, yeah.
Right. And, you know, obviously, probably referring, well, there's a lot of it in Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
pick one scene in particular sort of comes to mind. But again, you know, that scene is one that we go back and forth on. I mean, not in terms of is it right or wrong to include it or whatever, but sort of it's a scene that doesn't happen at all in the books, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm trying to remember in House of the Dragon. I don't think that there's anything in terms of what we have so far. Maybe I'm sure there's stuff that alludes to stuff like that, but I don't think there's anything specifically that would be sort of like that Sansa scene.
Yeah, I don't know. No, nothing
off the top of my head. I can't think of anything like that.
No, nothing direct.
It's gonna be, yeah.
Well, it'd be like Rhaenyra. I mean, if you know Daemon and Rhaenyra, like maybe manipulation or something. But nothing, like that, yeah. Nothing to the degree that like rape. I mean, there's nothing. I don't remember though. But I have to go back and read. I'm thinking of just the big characters. I'm sure there's something.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. And then I guess also just sort of, you know, how you sort of portray the land to make it feel like it's the set in that sort of a time period, like we saw in Game of Thrones. But I think that the more sort of focus with House of the Dragon is going to be, you know, like the difference between it and Game of Thrones is Game of Thrones, you have so much more. I think there'll be an equal number of players, but you also have, in Game of Thrones, you have like the White Walkers and magic and a lot more of these other sort of factors that can sort of win the entire thing there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with House of the Dragon, I think House of the Dragon is going to feel a little bit smaller with the cast of characters.
Mm-hmm.
Because we probably won't really see anything in Essos, I'm guessing. I mean, we might at some point, but I don't really think it's going to be as big of a focus as it was because you don't go up there. I don't even know the wall. It's just not part of what we have in that story. So I think that sort of lends itself better where you can make it a smaller story in terms of your key players. And then you're not.
Well, and
your focus will shift to the war more so itself.
Yeah, and this is maybe where you could include some of those lesser houses, and it's a chance for them to bring some more sigils or just other characters into King's Landing and build the world that way. Like, same sets, you don't have to, like you said, you don't have to bounce around to different, like, countries and filming locations. You can be in one spot and do a lot with a lot of different characters who kind of come and go or assassinated or imprisoned or whatever. You want to cause some chaos and some drama, you can do it with a larger cast on a smaller set. So maybe that's something that they might do. I mean, we're still going to bounce around to places in Westeros, obviously. But I mean, a lot of the drama goes down on Dragonstone and in King's Landing. So
yeah. So okay. Well, let's take a brief break here from our sponsors, then we're going to dive into the whole rest of the episode. Okay, now that we're back here, we're going to dive into Arya 10 here, which I think, is this the final Arya chapter? It is. This is the final Arya chapter of A Clash of Kings here. So after aiding in the capture of Harrenhal, Arya is now serving Lord Roose Bolton. She is bothered by the killing and head staking of many of the servants who worked for Lord Tywin, most of them inherited from Lady Shella Went, who held Harrenhal prior to Lord Tywin. Arya does not wish to reveal herself to the Lord of the Dreadfort, even though she knows the man to be one of Robb's bannermen. Arya overhears a meeting between Bolton and his advisors, mainly Freys. The Freys believe that Robb will lose and that they should sue for peace and leave Harrenhal. Bolton states that he is not a man to be undone, like Stannis Baratheon was. Arya learns that Winterfell has fallen and is horrified when she finds out that her brothers are dead. Bolton dismisses the Freys and has Arya remove the leeches. Qyburn reads a letter from the Lady Walda, Bolton's new wife. Bolton orders the letter burned and a message sent to Helmyn Tullhart, who had recently taken Derry from the Lannisters. Bolton orders him and Robert Glover to burn the castle and put the people within the sword to the name of the king, Robb, and then to strike east for Duskendale. Bolton says that both men will wish vengeance for what has transpired to their families and homes in the north. Bolton then announces that he will hunt wolves that day, for he cannot sleep with all the howling at night. That evening, Bolton returns with 9 dead wolves and tells Arya that he means to give Harrenhal to Varga Hote when he returns to the north. Arya is to remain at Harrenhal to serve the goat. Outside, I think they mean Hote. What I think they mean there. Outside the tower occupied by the Freys, she hears much shouting within and sees Elmer crying on the steps. The younger son of Lord Walder Frey says, "We've been dishonored. There was a bird from the twins, my lord father says. I'll need to marry someone else." Elmer was promised a princess originally, but whether or not he knows it to be Arya is unknown. Arya then decides to flee Harrenhal and eventually convinces Gendry and Hot Pie to come with her that night. They meet at the Tower of Ghosts. Gendry says the postern gate is guarded, and Arya says she will get rid of the guard. She approaches him openly and tells him that Lord Roos has her giving a silver piece to all the guards for their service. She takes out a coin, the coin Jaqen gave her, and drops it. When the guards reach for it, she slits his throat, and three ride out through a sally port away from Harrenhal.
Well, this, here we go, right? So we've got Arya is... this is the chapter where she wraps up her stay in Harrenhal, and she's learning a lot, getting the bits and pieces as to what Rob is doing, the blundering that's going on over in Riverrun. She's trying to get back to them, but you hear hints of this dishonor among the Freys. Bolton is making some aggressive moves towards Derry, and he's Duskendale. I mean, that's going to end up being... That all ties into to his ultimate plan to, you know, kind of betray Robb Stark and make his own way. So, yeah, I mean, Arya's taking the leeches off of him as he's about to go hunt for the hounds. This is where you bring up the whole, what's the theory we've done? The bolt-on theory, right? A lot of this chapter contains a lot of those quotes for the bolt-on theory, which Qyburn's involved in.
We can dive into it again. That's one of my favorite theories. And... it's clearly one of our listeners' favorite theories because it's easily one of our most watched videos on YouTube. We've done it twice, and they are hands down two of the most watched videos we have. So clearly, you guys like it. So hey, we'll talk about it again because I love it. I think Ez thinks it's kind of funny.
Hey, you know what though? Anymore, I am starting to believe that Roos Bolton is a big deal. When we looked at the Pink Letter and we talked about, like, who wrote that and what's going on with all of that, I mean, he is a guy not to be messed with, and I feel like he's pulling the strings in a lot of ways, and he's just been kind of... He's kind of like the... you have Euron Greyjoy doing his thing, a big bad villain, possibly tons of powers and different things, and, like, Roos is more subtle. Ramsay, we focus in on Ramsay because he's so aggressive and nasty and evil and all these different things and whatever, but Roos is... like stealthy, a guy you got to keep your eye on, and he could be this nocturnal, crazy, immortal creature. I mean, why not?
Hey, this is a series with, you know, zombies and you know, White Walkers and dragons and ice giants and spiders and all this. Absolutely. So okay, here, so the chapter starts. The heads had been dipped in tar to slow the rot. Every morning when Arya went to the well to draw fresh water for Roose Bolton's basin, she had to pass beneath them. They faced outward, so she never saw their faces, but she liked to pretend that one of them was Joffrey's. She tried to picture how his pretty face would look if it were dipped in tar. If I was a crow, I could fly down and peck off his stupid, fat, pouty lips.
Yeah.
So, you know, also some interesting foreshadowing here. You know, look how many times the word face is mentioned.
Yes.
There.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, at the end of this, we see her flip the coin to the guard, Jaqen's coin, and make her kind of, you know, first kill or whatever. And she started down that path of becoming like an assassin and stealth and all of that, which is cool. Yeah. So it's just leading us to her travel to the Faceless Men. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So as we sort of, you know, progress on here. So it's kind of interesting, actually, again, you know, this, what we're going to get to here with her fetching stuff for Roose Bolton. This is a major departure in the show, as
yeah,
that the show ends up going with Tywin as sort of the person that she's bearing the cup for. But I actually find what we'll see here, I think, far more interesting in the books, because it makes obvious sense. So for those of you guys who, you know, just sort of watch the show and are listening along here, it makes far more sense for her obviously not to reveal herself to Tywin Lannister, because
yeah,
obviously he's you know, the commander of the opposing army. But here in the books, I find it far more interesting that she's not going to reveal herself to Roose Bolton, even though she knows that he is one of Rob's bannermen. Wouldn't it? Don't you think it would make sense for her to reveal herself to Roose Bolton? And yeah, also, Yeah. We've talked about this before. Roose Bolton doesn't recognize her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So I get maybe he definitely should recognize some of the older children. I get why maybe he wouldn't recognize Arya because she's younger and hadn't, you know, they don't always come calling at Winterfell. But Arya, I think, is just mistrustful because it's Harrenhal and because of the journey they've gone through, right? Being taken there by the Night's Watch and then being everyone's getting killed and they're on the run, and then you've got the Ticklers in there, the Mountain was in there doing his thing, and so it's been kind of crazy for her, right? And now who is this guy who's taken over Harrenhal? And I don't know, they don't seem like he still has this air of kind of, I don't know, like gruffer, I don't know how to explain it, but like he's not Rob, and he's not some of Rob's well-known, well-liked bannermen. He's not someone who's super close. The Boltons were never really closely affiliated with the Starks, and they've had contentious relationships and things like that. I mean, immediately once they've left and the banners are called and they move south, we've got stuff going on with Ramsay up there, and White Harbor's trying to respond to it, and people are, Lady Hornwood, right? Is that her name? They're all trying to figure out what to do with her land and stuff. So there's not to be trusted. Maybe Arya knows some of that, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, we can play a quick little. Let's play a quick little what if here. What if Arya had revealed herself to Roose Bolton at this moment in time?
Well, a lot of things are going on, right? So he's it's a piece, whether. She's either a bargaining chip for him in terms of like getting some renown or some extra status or whatever with Rob, right? If he wants to remain and keep that whole bond strong and do something for King Rob and be his man and move up in the ranks and be closer to him, that's good if he has Arya. It's also great that he has Arya to play back to if you ever want to get in the good graces of, because he's rebelled. He's in open rebellion against the crown. So if he had Arya, and that's a chip he can play to, you know, give back to Cersei or to Tywin, that's a good thing. So I think he'd just use her. I think he'd keep her. I don't think he'd put her on a horse and with a bunch of men and just send her away. The safest place is with him, right? He's surrounded by his men, and maybe she knows that too. Like, he's not going to just up and send her away. I don't know. I also don't know. I feel like She's just a kid too, and she has this in her mind set, I have to get to River Run. I've heard where my family is at is where I need to be and where I need to go. Maybe even if it were the Glovers or the Manderleys or whoever was in charge here, I still think maybe she would just want to go that direction and just get there and not trust anyone because she's seen so much evil done or what have you. But I don't know, man. I don't know what he would do if she were revealed.
Yeah, I would say maybe at this point right now, at this sort of exact moment, and again, you know, some of these chapters, I think also too, you do need to take with the idea that some of these chapters may be happening at the same time as other chapters. So, you know, like we just got done sort of with a lot of what was going on at the Battle of the Blackwater. Yeah. So who knows? I don't think it's mentioned here. We know that Lord Tywin went all the way back and they ended up winning sort of the battle of the Blackwater and defeating Stannis.
Right.
And so Arya is just sort of a girl. So the leverage the really only leverage you have is you have leverage against Rob. Because by having her, I don't really understand what with Rob, maybe some renown and stuff like that, but you still have to bank on the idea that he's going to theoretically go crush Tywin Lannister, and then what, right? Maybe Roose Bolton gets Casterly Rock out of the whole deal. Seems like he's already got Harrenhal. I don't really know. I think if you're trying to play the Game of Thrones and achieve as much, I think his best bet would be to betray Rob and sell Arya back to the Lannisters. Mm-hmm. But that's only if you don't know about like what's going on with Stannis and all that other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's limited. So the crazy thing is, he's a guy who, while stuff is developing, he's keeping multiple avenues open. He's getting letters from his wife, communication from the Freys, strong alliance there with his wife. He's got Freys all around him. He's in proximity, a little closer, I believe, to the twins. So he is keeping all options open. That's the type of guy he is. In case something goes wrong and Rob loses, he needs to be ready to step up and have good alliances to take over the seat of Winterfell, or just to be the, you know, the guy in charge of the North, right? That's where he's headed. So I don't, yeah, I, he just on his own, just deciding to do one thing or the other, or just completely betray Rob. It's like that happens because of the Freys, and the Freys are already leaning that way after what he's done. He's seeing an avenue there. His wife's writing him the letters. He talks to Jaime Lannister, makes a deal, you know, with his father later to write, like, remind your father who sent you along the way, which is all good. So he's always, I feel like, just playing all different sides. And that's something Rob or Eddard Stark would have known, which is to keep your eyes on him, keep him close to where you can watch him. And now he's been sent away doing his own thing. So remember what was the battle where Roose was supposed to be, it was one of the first battles, I think, where he's ruthless. They use him as a feint, and a lot of men went and died. Let me pull it up here real quick.
Is it the battle where they get Jaime Lannister?
Yeah, I think so. Yes. Yeah, I'm just trying to remember where they sent Roose. But anyway, to your point, I mean, he doesn't do anything unless he's sure about it, and he keeps all these avenues and back doors open. He's just a conniving type of guy.
Wow. Okay. Conniving. That's a good word.
Yeah. Yeah. I think.
Okay. So as we sort of go on here, Arya again, right here. Sometimes she wished she had gone across the narrow sea with Jack and Hagar. She still had the stupid coin he'd given her, a piece of iron no larger than a penny, and rested along the rim. One side had writing on it, queer words she could not read. The other showed a man's head, but so worn that all of his features had rubbed off. He said it was of great value, but that was probably a lie too, like his name and even his face. That made her so angry that she threw the coin away, but after an hour, she got to feeling bad and went and found it again, even though it wasn't worth anything. She was thinking about the coin as she crossed the Flowerstone Yard, struggling with the weight of the water in her pail. Nan, a voice called out, put down the pail and come help me. So this coin kind of comes up and up and up throughout this chapter. And it's kind of like, what path am I going to choose here?
Yeah. So, I mean, is she, yeah, cause she has to get out of Harrenhal, and she's, you know, I mean, is she gonna, yeah, she has to kill her way out. I don't know, man. She did the Jacken thing. She's already used up her, you know, her, she got the coin from Jacken. He
yeah,
says,
she's
you
used,
know, you,
she's
you,
used
you
her
can come,
yes.
Yeah. You can come over there later, right? You can come to see the faceless man, yep. Join up with that. That's like the last resort, though. It's right now. It's get back to family time, and yeah. The crazy thing is that she actually convinces the other two, Hot Pie and Gendry, to go with her, and that is all kind of comical. Gendry's just all like, "We're gonna get killed. This is not a good idea." And so she is a brave little thing, right? She's just like, "We've got to go. Let's get out of here. This is bad." And she is in there listening to Roose, and you know, still doesn't feel comfortable staying there. Doesn't feel comfortable revealing herself. So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, after that, we move on a little bit here. So this is where she's like fetching leeches, getting leeches ready.
Yeah.
You know, Arya picked up the pail. Maybe you should get leech too. There's leeches in the neck as big as pigs. You know, she left him there. Talking about Elmer. The Lord's bedchamber was crowded when she entered. Qyburn was in attendance, and Dower Walton in his mail shirt and greaves, plus a dozen Freys, all brothers, half-brothers, and cousins. Roose Bolton lay abed naked. Leeches clung to the inside of his arms and legs and dotted his pallid chest. long translucent things that turned a glistening pink as they fed. Bolton paid them no more mind than he did Arya. And so this is when they're sort of coming up with a plan. We must not allow Lord Tywin to trap us here at Harrenhal. There's some other people talking. They're saying, you know, the castle's so large, it requires an army to hold it. Once surrounded, we cannot feed an army. And then Bolton says, I do not mean to be besieged here. And so then they're sort of coming up with a plan. First of all, what a scene here where Roose Bolton's like, hey, guys, just come on in. Don't mind me. I'm just getting, you know, I'm just lying in bed naked with a bunch of leeches on me. Let's talk some strategy here.
Yeah, he's a scary dude. I mean, he's that's weird. That is weird.
That's incredibly weird.
Yeah. Well, it's and Qyburn's the one doing it, right? And that's an interesting thing that Qyburn is just sort of left over there.
And what was Qyburn doing before? I mean, he's the maester for Roose Bolton. Then he finds his way into Cersei's service.
Yeah.
And sort of makes, you know, Sir Gregor, you know, the mountain sort of turns him into Sir Robert Strong. If he does that with the mountain, has he done anything like this with Roose Bolton, perhaps? That's something we didn't talk about in the vampire theory.
Well, the crazy, so Qyburn, right, he's there among the brave companions when they arrive at Harrenhal. After the sellswords turn cloak through the fall of Harrenhal, Qyburn takes over the duties of Harrenhal's maester, who's killed by Roose Bolton for dispatching ravens to King's Landing. And then Arya hears rumors that Qyburn lost his maester's chain for necromancy. So he's definitely done something like this before, and he is skilled. He'll tend to Sir Jaime later on. And yeah, but he doesn't go with, probably because Bolton has his own maester back up at the Dreadfort, but he decides to go south. And later on he just ends up being there and is picked by Cersei to, you know, deal with the body of Shay and so on. He's a weird dude. He's a creepy dude. They're both creepy. They're perfect for each other. Maybe he knows some blood magic, you know?
He might. Okay, so after that, we have Roose Bolton talking about what his plan is. He's talking about, he said, Lord Tywin is many leagues from here. Bolton said he has many matters yet to settle in King's Landing. He will not march on Harrenhal for some time. Sir Aenys shook his head stubbornly. You do not know the Lannisters as we do, my lord. King Stannis thought that Lord Tywin was 1,000 leagues away until it did him. So talking about he could be coming back for us at any moment.
Which is why you go back to these letters with Walda, like his wife, who is sending this communication to him that he's just burning. He's not replying, but she continues to send them. And that's important that George mentions that. It's just communication from the twins or from the phrase. Some people think it's coded and so on. He's keeping track of all the events here, but he's got to watch his back as Tywin is still, he's still right now in open rebellion to the crown, and he's with Rob. So he's just sent. Yeah, I mean, who was it? Glover over, like I said, to Duskendale, and he's. They're like, on
he's making moves. Look, so you have some of the other people saying, Sir Horace High, who was on phrase, you know, he's agreeing with what's being said here. You look at some of these other people in the room. If Lord Tywin could defeat a seasoned man like Stannis Baratheon, what chance will our boy king have against him? Someone must have the courage to say it, Sir Hosteen said. The war is lost. King Rob must be made to see that. Roose Bolton studied him with his pale eyes. His grace has defeated the Lannisters every time he's faced them in battle. He's lost the North, insisted Hosteen Frey. He's lost Winterfell. His brothers are dead. Then it sort of goes into some inner Arya dialogue. They're saying, had Stannis won, all might be different, Ronald Rivers says. Stannis lost, Sir Hosteen said bluntly, wishing it were otherwise would not make it so. King Rob must make peace with the Lannisters. And Roose says, and who will tell him so? Roose Bolton smiled. It's a fine thing to have so many valiant brothers in such troubled times. I shall think on all that you got, all of you have said. His smile was dismissal. Then sort of they end up leading. And then, of course, he's getting more. Then he's having Arya come over and help him with the leeching.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I'm still trying to remember, like, you know, I know it's in A Storm of Swords where we're getting close to, right, Jamie showing up and then him talking about, remember, don't hold me responsible for this. It's the Brave Companions, Vargo, and so on, for maiming him. At what point is he starting to kind of turn? Because they're learning that Rob has dishonored the Freys big time, right, by taking a wife and not keeping up his promise and so on. So they're all upset. And that's what Arya doesn't understand. Her point of view is that, I don't get it, but the Freys have somehow been dishonored. She was going to be left there for the Brave Companions, which is why she skedaddles. She's out because she doesn't like those guys. They're evil dudes. So she's on her way out. But why... Like when I guess what I'm trying to say is I feel like these plans or this thought for an alternate path or route or just, you know, option as to where you go. He is hearing what the Freys are saying, and he does know what Rob is capable of. But this information comes in Arya 10, and it happens right again, right out the gate, as we start the next Storm of Swords. With Jaime and so on arriving, and you're learning that, yeah, the freaking Starks are in trouble because Rob has messed up. So at that point, he opens up one of the other avenues and says, let me start to build alliances through Jaime, with Tywin, talking to Walder Frey, his wife, and so on. So that's all happening right now, I mean, I feel like. But you almost get, yeah, a tipping of when he sends... When he sends Glover and those guys on a suicide mission, that either could be... Maybe I'm misremembering, you know, but that's either to, like, take a few of them out and just say, who cares? Or to intentionally try to, I don't know, what was the point of that? I guess I don't remember, like, the whole, you know, he sends them on that mission to Duskendale. Is he still loyal to Rob at that point? Because they're false orders. I think he's saying that Rob wants them to go to Duskendale, and he's just calling his own shot.
Well,
he is,
and he does some other things here too. You know, right here, when he's going to have them burn let them take their vengeance on Duskendale. Kyburn's preparing a seal. Arya was glad to hear that the castle of the Dairies would be burned. That's where they brought her when she'd been caught after the fight with Joffrey, and where they made them kill Sansa's wolf. It deserves to burn, Arya thinks. She wished that Robert Glover and Sir Holman Tullheart would come back to Harrenhal, though. They marched too quickly before she'd been able to decide whether to trust them with her secret. And then Bolton says, I'm going to go hunting for wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Which is weird, because that's like your... It's the sigil of your, you know, I'm going to go wolf hunting now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. it's sort of interesting here what Ger does with his writing, because kind of seems like, you know, you're doing this sort of back and forth with Bolton where you're like, okay, can he be trusted? I don't know, maybe. And then right here, you know, he's talking about how wolves once roamed the north in great packs of 100 or more and feared neither man nor mammoth, but that was long ago and in another land. It is queer to see the common wolves of the south so bold. Terrible times breed terrible things, my lord. It's Kyburn. Bolton showed his teeth in something that might have been a smile. And are these times so terrible, maester? Summer is gone and there are four kings in the realm. One king may be terrible, but four? He shrugged. And then he asks Arya for his cloak. So it's almost like that classic sort of like movie... You know, like you think about a movie where you've got this guy who you think might be a villain or whatever, and then you get that close up on his face and he sort of says something and grins, and you're like, okay, this guy's definitely the villain, and plays that music. That's kind of like what that scene, you know, reminds me of.
Yeah. 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 Just real quick. So while I'm thinking about this, cause I had to go look this up, and I wanted to make this clear, because we at any point in time can dive into a bolt-on theory and we'll get way away from it,
we're pretty past a lot of that.
Okay, cool.
Because next, yeah,
because I just wanted a refresher, because sometimes I honestly forget and I can't remember all these characters. So I looked up Glover And I was just trying to remember the whole Duskendale situation. So when Rob's army is split at the Twins after Walder and Catelyn negotiate an alliance, Glover becomes part of Lord Bolton's forces that go on to fight at the Battle of the Green Fork against Tywin's main host, right? So that's in the first book, A Clash of Kings. Now moving on, Glover is in Lord Roose Bolton's camp when it's approached by Vargo Hoat, leader of the Brave Companions. Arya Stark serves as the cupbearer and so on. Vargo claims that, after Lord Tywin Lannister marches from the castle, Vargo brings in a group of ragged prisoners led by, Aenys Frey and Glover. They're there. Vargo claims they were captured when the Brave Companions, right, repelled an attempt by Lord Bolton's forces to cross the Trident. And then Lorch and all of those guys are, it's the whole, you know, where we have the soup and the whole thing happens, right? Let me skip on down here. Let's see. Following the fall of Harrenhal, Glover is among those welcoming Roose the following evening. Glover rides out of the castle soon, leaving Arya not enough time to come to a decision whether she can trust him with her identity. So he was one of the individuals that she was considering, you know, telling that, hey, I'm Arya Stark. Following Tywin's victory over Stannis Baratheon in the Battle of the Blackwater, Roose orders Glover to join with Sir Helmand Tallheart and march on Duskendale and the Crownlands. Richlands, hardly touched by the war. The Glover seat, Deepwood Moat, is taken. It's been taken by Asha Greyjoy, and Helmand has lost his son, Benfred. So Lord Bolton expects, right, that these two want to take their vengeance out on Duskendale. Now, this is where it gets interesting. So I'm going to bounce forward a little bit here into A Storm of Swords. Lord Tywin soon finds out about the march on a third of the Northmen's strength on Duskendale, led by Glover and Tallheart. Tywin orders Randall Tarly to head up that way, right, and to kind of deal with this. Also, Gregor Clegane goes there to move up the King's Road to cut off their retreat. When Tywin's son Tyrion learns about this, he is surprised, as there seems nothing in Duskendale worth such a risk. Tyrion wonders whether Robb Stark, King of the North, has finally made a blunder, but his father tells him that it is not a matter he should concern himself with. The Battle of Duskendale turns into a disaster for the Northmen. The forces of Lord Tarly catch up with Glover's men outside of Duskendale, trapping them against the Blackwater Bay. Fighting breaks out with heavy losses on both sides, but the forces loyal to the Iron Throne prevail, and Helmand is among 1,000 Northmen killed. Glover leads a chaotic retreat towards Harrenhal, but not expecting to be faced with the mountain's men along the way. When Robb learns about the defeat and Glover's capture, he is bewildered, wondering why his forces marched on Duskendale in the first place, and how that campaign justified losing a third of his infantry. Robb intends to exchange Glover for Martin Lannister, who is the son of Tywin's brother Kevin, as Martin's twin brother Willem has already been murdered by Lord Rickard Karstark, right? That's the whole situation Robb deals with Karstark. It also provides an opportunity for Robb to rid himself of the concern that Martin will be slaughtered by Northmen as well. So Tywin agrees to Robb's offer, and Glover is put on a ship at Duskendale while Martin is...
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Handed over to the Lannisters at the Golden Tooth. When Robb's hosts gather at the Twins for the Tully wedding, right? Edmure's there getting his the red wedding. Robb meets with Roose Bolton, commanding the remnants of Robb's foot. Robb tells Roose that Glover will have to answer for Duskendale when they meet again. Roose plays into Robb's mistaken belief that the campaign came on Glover's initiative, suggesting that Glover acted out of grief and fear for his wife and children when he heard that Deepwood had been taken. Roose then betrays and murders Robb right there. So I get the reason I bring this up is, you try to think about when does Bolton, because he at the end of this book he sends them to make that move. has he already decided? I mean, did that letter from Walda Frey basically say that we've been betrayed and we plan on taking out Rob and you need to be with us? Like, is that a coded message from his wife, from the twins? That, because I don't remember. I don't remember how, like, why send them there, Matt? Why send Glover to Duskendale? Just to die? Or did he think he was going to die? Tallheart dies. Or did he, because Rob didn't order it, you know?
Right.
And I just don't remember why that. So hopefully somebody can help me out, some the Raven or something, just to remind me as, because I was looking up on Reddit, like, these letters that are coming in that you just burn, right? Walda sends in a letter and it's just burned. It's read, it's burned. Is it coded? And is that
he's
how,
making moves?
Yeah, right. That's what that is. I'm guessing. So anyway, but it just,
I mean,
it just means it starts earlier than I thought. Like, he's defending Rob, like with the phrase saying, "Hey, hold on here. He's beaten Lannister at every turn. He's doing a good job." But there now, then he gets this letter from the Freys basically saying, we don't care. Like, we're going to do our own thing and the tide is shifting. We're going to move now against, because if all the Freys leave Rob, then Bolton sees that as an opportunity to say, yeah, I need to join up with them. And this is a chance where we could actually outmaneuver him, win our way back into, you know, good graces with the Iron Throne, and he becomes Warden of the North.
Well, the other piece of the pie is that you also have Reek, right, or Ramsay, who's seeing what's going on up at Winterfell.
Yeah.
So now I don't think we get anything here that he's received a letter from Reek or whatever, but at least we certainly know, you know, he's probably in communication and has that information, because it does come into play later. So if you're Ramsay Bolton, you've got that going on up in Winterfell. Stannis just lost. Tywin just took King's Landing. It's going to be hard. Renly's dead.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're really only the only other competitor to the throne out there, Balon Greyjoy. I mean, he's a joke. And I think he probably knows it. And especially because they could have Theon here. So really, it's almost like you're going to bet on Rob, who's lost Winterfell. Or you're gonna bet on the crown and Tywin Lannister, who just beat Stannis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, exactly. and Winterfell's up for grabs.
Right. Exactly. And I guess what this shows, though, is in what I was just what I'm coming to in my own mind here is, and maybe people have saw this for years, and I don't know, but that correspondence and him marrying a Frey and that close tie or whatever just shows that there was a stronger alliance between him and Walda Frey than there was really with his own king, or that he, like you said, yeah, he's betting more on, like, the Freys provide a lot to Rob, and they are the way right. back, right? I mean, you have to go through them to get back. So
do you think Rob even has it? Yeah. Even if the Red Wedding doesn't happen, do you think Rob has an actual chance of winning?
No.
Still? You don't know. So even if the Red Wedding doesn't happen, Rob Stark would have to. You got to think about where he's at.
Unless the Vale joins up. Unless
the Vale. Because even if you get Arya back, that doesn't really do a whole lot. Because now you just have Arya, but you still don't have Sansa, and she's still a piece.
Yeah.
So you're just sort of still the United North and the Riverlands taking on the Lannisters. I mean, you're not going to go take King's Landing. It doesn't seem like the North is at all equipped to go do that. Your best bet, I think, is to sort of just hold them off. And then eventually they just get tired of it and say, all right, well, whatever.
Yeah.
That's kind of what happened in our United States Revolutionary War was, it was just kind of, you know, it's across this huge sea and England was finally kind of like, all right, well,
yeah,
you know, whatever. It's like we didn't go over to England and, you know, take their castle. It just got to the point to where it just wasn't worth it anymore.
Yeah. That's one of the things, right? The North is, it's so big, it's so vast that really at some point they could, and Dorne, same thing. Why was Dorne so independent for so long? It's just like, is it worth it?
Yeah. you'd have to commit so many resources to try and take them.
Yeah.
And then if you're Roose Bolton, you go back to if Rob wins, right? Let's say that they decide they don't want to fight anymore. But then in 20 years or whatever, when they decide, we're going to take it back, you get a new king. Or Joffrey would be like, we're going to go take it back. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tywin's older. If he dies, Moat Cailin is on your way, and you know, and Deepwood Mott, and then the Dreadfort, all those places, Dreadfort especially, obviously, is on your way to Winterfell. So it seems like he's gonna get hit first. So yeah, I think I'm with you. I don't know actually that Rob would have won unless you just they're not taking King's Landing.
Yeah, no. And that's the thing. The hope is that he would go up north and just make them independent and just say, we're going to be done with all this. We're going to rule with the king in the north, and that's that. And I really think even at some point, Tywin and them, you'd have a border, and you've got the neck there with the marshlands and all this kind of stuff. And once you deal with the Ironborn and you get them out of Deepwood, you can take it back, yeah, and you can kind of hold that, and you'd be okay. It's just not worth it. So, but yeah, he would not be able to, I don't think, take the Iron Throne. I don't see that happening. So,
yeah. So your best bet would sort of be, you think about where you're at right now,
and you're losing the frays. So that's what Roose is realizing. You're losing the frays. So he's like, I'm going to start making.
Yeah,
moves.
But at this point, Rob has not yet sort of married. He's not married Jane Westerling yet.
Well, I think. I think in
no.
This, no, no, yeah,
no, it's not yet. We haven't even met Jane Westerling yet
in the books. Right, so hold on, let me back up here then. We got the last Catelyn chapter. Yeah, okay. Gosh, this is what happens when I start reading into Storm of Swords and I get, get ahead of myself.
Yeah, so Rob could still totally marry a Frey. I mean, right now, really, you think Arya would end up sort of making her way back. Then it's then you do maybe a trade Jaime for Sansa, and then you've got what you want back.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because the last Catelyn chapter, right, is just she's talking to Jaime. She goes down there and talks to Jaime mm-hmm. for a little bit. I guess it's either just happened or it starts right at the beginning of the first book. Either one. Yeah. So either way.
Has he been yet? Has he been?
Well, it says Catelyn then reveals that Rob has recently taken.
No, there's one. No, there's one Catelyn chapter left.
Oh, there is? Okay. Let me see. Oh, there we go. So we have one to go, and that's where that's revealed. Right?
Oh, wait. Sorry. Nope, sorry, I was in the wrong book. Yes, we have done the last Catelyn chapter of this.
And celebrations going
no, the
on.
Last no, the last chapter.
Yeah.
The last chapter is where she's down talking to Jaime, and then she calls for Brienne's sword.
Yeah. Right.
And but you don't realize until, because the first chapter of A Storm of Swords is a Jaime chapter.
Gotcha. Okay. So I guess it's just like whatever this news is that Arya has heard, that's the hint though, right? Because the phrase
yes.
The phrase have said the phrase know that Rob has done something. Because in this chapter,
right.
He's like, I have to pick a new, you know, whoever it is that Arya is talking to, one of the Freys has to pick a new
new princess.
New prince. Yeah. Because it can't be a, you know, Rob or a Rob's family, one of the Starks. So they've right. heard we the reader, I guess then yeah, like we're trying to figure out what the heck did the Freys know that we don't know that hasn't got back. And then I would say Roose
yeah.
knows that. Roose knows it, and that's why he's doing what he does so early on with Jaime and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just okay. a little thing, but it's like, it's just interesting to think that he was plotting some of this, all along the way, but yeah.
Okay, so now we let's move on just a little bit more here. So this is where we're going to get to where she's ultimately going to end up leaving. Before she does, though, she's in the Godswood. She found her broomstick sword where she had left it and carried it to the heart tree. There she now, red leaves rustled, red eyes peered inside her. The eyes of the god. Tell me what to do, you gods, she prayed. For a long moment, there was no sound but the wind in the water and the creak of a leaf and limb. And then far, far off beyond the godwoods and the haunted towers and the immense stone walls of Harrenhal, from somewhere out in the world came the long, lonely howl of a wolf. Goose prickles rose on Arya's skins, and for an instant she felt dizzy. Then so faintly, it seemed as if she heard her father's voice. When the snows fall and the white wind blows, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives, he says. But there is no pack, she whispered to the weirwood. Bran and Rickon were dead, and Lannisters have Sansa. Jon had gone to the wall. I'm not even me now. I'm Nan. You are Arya of Winterfell, daughter of the North. You told me you could be strong. You have the wolf's blood in you. The wolf blood, Arya remembered now. I'll be as strong as Rob. I said I would. She took a deep breath and lifted the broomstick in both hands and brought it down across her knee and broke it with a loud crack and threw the pieces aside. I am a dire wolf and am done with wooden teeth.
Yep. It's go time for her. I mean, it's go time. Yeah. Yeah. The lone wolf out there, we're hunting wolves. Yeah. It's just pretty, that's pretty cool. And yeah, and again, she's heard that she's going to be left behind with the Brave Companion, so she's out on that. I mean, yeah, it's cool because it's a cool start for her arc going to Essos.
It is. It's an enormous changing point for Arya here, because this will sort of dive her, you know, deeper into where she's ultimately going to go, going to Braavos, and then most likely coming back, and she'll reflect upon that here. Now I will say that this is one of the for people who love pointing out theories, this right here is another one of those Bran is behind everything for those theorists. Mm-hmm. Because she's at a Godswood, she's praying, tell me what to do, there's no sound, and then it's like leaves rustling and things like that,
right?
And a lot of the Bran is behind sort of everything in the future, you know, future Bran, yep, going, yep, back in time and everything. This is one of those that he could be right now influencing this exact moment.
Yeah. It's like when people are in the Godswood, it's like, pay attention, because I mean, you know, who knows? And the rustling leaves are always that indicator that the gods are speaking, and is that Bran or Blood, right, Raven? Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
Or is it her father?
Jeez. Well, could I be. Mean, hey, once they die, I mean, where is his body, by the way? Where is Eddard Stark's body? My God, you know, the bones.
It's on its way back.
Supposedly.
It's on its way back. So, okay. So, I mean, really, then we kind of move on a little bit. And this is where she's going to end up getting hot pie and everybody. And, hey, let's leave. And then she ends up running into the guard here. So. Let me see here. Where's the best place to start about this? I'm just going to read quite a bit here. She made no effort to hide, but approached the guard openly, as if Lord Bolton himself had sent her. He watched her come, curious as to what might be bringing a page here in this black hour. When she got closer, she saw that he was a Northman, very tall and thin, huddled in a ragged fur cloak. That was bad. She might have been able to trick a Frey or one of the Brave Companions, but the Dreadfort men have served Roose Bolton their whole life, and they knew him better than she did. If I tell him I'm Arya Stark and command him to stand aside, no, she dare not. He was a Northman, but not a Winterfell man. He belonged to Roose Bolton. When she reached him, she pushed back her cloak so she would so he would see the flayed man on her breast. Lord Bolton sent me. At this hour, why for? She could see the gleam of steel under the fur, and she did not know if she was strong enough to drive the point of the dagger through chainmail. His throat. It must be his throat, but he's too tall. I'll never reach it. For a moment, she did not know what to say. For a moment, she was a little girl again and scared, and the rain on her face felt like tears. He told me to give all guards a silver piece for their good service. The words seemed to come out of nowhere. Silver, you say? He did not believe her, but he wanted to. Silver was silver, after all. Give it over, then. Her fingers dug down beneath her tunic and came out clutching the coin Jacken had given her. In the dark, the iron could pass for tarnished silver. She held it out and let it slip through her fingers. Cursing her softly, the man went down to a knee to grope for the coin in the dirt, and there was his neck right in front of her. Arya slid her dagger out and drew it across his throat, as smooth as summer silk. His blood covered her hands in a hot gush. He tried to shout, but there was blood in his mouth as well. "Valar Morghulis," she whispered as he died. When he stopped moving, she picked up the coin outside of the walls of Harrenhal. A wolf howled long and loud. She lifted the bar, set it aside, and pulled open the heavy oak door. By the time Hot Pie and Gendry came up with his horses, the rain was falling hard. "You killed him," Hot Pie gasped. "What did you think I would do?" Her fingers were sticky with blood, and the smell was making her mare skittish. "It's no matter," she thought, swinging up into the saddle. "The rain will wash them clean again." Talk about it. First of all,
yeah, it's crazy. It's a epic, crazy moment.
We get some epic Arya moments in this chapter.
Yeah, it's pretty. That's pretty crazy. Like when you think about her, just like the whole sequence of like that coin going down, her taking the knife out and just slitting the throat. That's pretty intense for her. I mean, she might have gotten in a rage with some kids her age and poked, you know, poked him with the pointy end. But this was a bit more. So
it's way cooler. I mean, and you know, and she's like, in summary, I guess this chapter is, it's a huge sort of who is Arya going to become chapter. Really, she's going back and forth on the faceless men. She's hearing a wolf. "No, I'm Arya Stark of Winterfell." The lone wolf, you know, the pack survives, all of this stuff. And it's all in this one Arya chapter. I mean, you can almost even argue this might be her sort of brand three of a Game of Thrones, where it's like so much of Bran's story goes back to that one chapter where he first has his first sort of crow dream. I mean, this is sort of, I would say, one of Arya's most important chapters.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's right here at the end, and that's what he does. George is driving us all the way to a certain decision, a fork in the road, and this is the choice she makes, and it leads her down this path of becoming, you know, some crazy assassin. And it we won't see it. It doesn't become quite clear because she's again got a long way to go until we get to, you know, going across the narrow sea and all of that. But she is determined right now, at least, to get back to her family, and she'll do whatever. I mean, she's willing to kill to get out of there, and which is something you think about Arya and her character. Being willing to do whatever it takes to either get back to your family or to make something right. Like when she has to give up her name and she has to become nameless, faceless and so on, it's hard for her to give up that final piece of Arya Stark. It is so important that she is a Stark and that she get back to them. And it hurts her so much to hear about her brothers being lost at Winterfell and all these things. And she hates them. She has she's so passionately like just, hey, she sees all these evil things done that she has a death list, right? Where she wants people to die, and she's been naming them.
You know, what's interesting, not to jump super far ahead here, but in the next book and her next chapter, is actually, even though it's in the next book, it's actually not that far off in terms of how many chapters to go, because it's like I think the third chapter of the next book. In the next chapter, Arya works in a wolf dream, basically, probably into Nymeria, who's out running around. It doesn't specifically say, but it seems pretty likely. And then she's like ravaging bloody mummers. She kills three of them in the next thing in sort of this wolf dream.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, so this is that catalyst to kind of take her into when the leaves are rustling and she's been there. It's almost like this is this magical moment where now she's starting to do more of those things, having like her dreams are amplified, or we're getting more of this idea that she's a warg. And
that's okay, cool. All right, Ez, do we have a raven today?
We do. So we just have a couple comments here. First up, let's talk about, So we talk about Rainey's just a little bit. I love that the Rainey's video, the old theory that we did back in the day, is still getting some attention on YouTube. So if you haven't checked it out, it's Rainey's Targaryen. Is she still alive, right? Has she been, is she the Sphinx, is ultimately where we go with that. Like, we looked at the timeline, I think it was 283 or 282, or maybe it was 280, when she was born. and we looked for someone else born at the same time that she was born, and you have Alaris, the Sphinx, yeah, and a connection to the Sand Snakes. And she also herself was Dornish, right, in nature. So this is the this is Rhaegar's daughter, Rhaenys, who is killed at the Sack of King's Landing. And we had a comment on that video that says, what if Rhaenys, and this is kind of wild, this is wild, and I first said, should we even read this? I mean, this is kind of crazy. But I was like, you know what, maybe. So we read everything on this show, so why not? What if Rhaenys was indeed dragged from her bed and killed, and then brought back to life? She was so mutilated by 50 stab wounds that if she was brought back, she would be disfigured. She could also have visions. What if she was Quaithe? And so in all of the kind of like, who is Quaithe, you normally don't throw out Rhaenys Targaryen because it's confirmed she's dead, right? George says that she's dead. And then we had another great comment on there a couple weeks back where someone said, no, what George said was that it is believed, or that that there is no doubt that she is dead. Doesn't mean just that there's no one doubts it. And that play on just the way you phrase that doesn't mean she is dead. Just there's right. No one doubts that she is. And so I'm doubting it, my friend. Okay. I doubt that she's dead. I think she's alive. I think she's the Sphinx. I think she's the riddle. She's, you know, there's more to this. If Aegon is alive, or that's some, you know, just maybe it is Fagon, it's just some created Blackfyre, who knows, young Griff coming back across the way. But if he is actually still alive, why not have some secret, you know, the older sister is also alive. The problem is with that, it's always tough because she's Dornish looking, her skin, mm-hmm. and just the way in which she looks. This is what the Mad King says, that she even smelled Dornish, you know, whatever. He's rude guy. And so how do you find a babe or someone else to look like her? Well, you don't, Matt, because whoever they killed in her place was stabbed 50 times. So no one's even looking too closely to see whether or not she was. And why would you do that? Matt, why? Now, hold on a second. Why? This is what right. always drove home for me, that Rhaenys is still alive. And that if Elia could get her children out, she would. Okay. And to make sure that people believed that her children had left, she stays with others that are imposters or whatever. And that sells it, because Elia was with them. Okay.
Right.
So you get them out of the city if you can, and they would go to her brother, and she would become one of his many bastard children, right? And she would fit right in. She would fit right in there, and no one would question it. All of a sudden, some girl shows up in his life, the Red Viper's life. That makes sense, because he's had bastards before, and then you know, a woman will show up and say, "This is your bastard daughter. You need to take her in." And so he does. So to me, I was always like, "There's no reason to murder a child like that, and like with that type of brutality, to where that you can't even." You can't even tell.
Right. It's excessive, and it's almost too excessive.
It's just, exactly
right.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I mean, I know.
I think
obviously
we need to redo the video.
Obviously this is incredibly gruesome, because you're talking about, you know, stabbing like mm-hmm, a young mm-hmm. like two year old girl.
I know.
But
I know, terrible.
I mean, just I mean, think about this for a second. There, imagine a piece of steak. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like you're just stabbing this like thing over and over and over again. Like, it's just going to be so mangled. It's like, what's the point after you 50 times? That's just too much.
That's what I'm saying, man. That was my always. Right. I thought, like, this is so excessive that you're hiding.
So it could be exaggerated. It could be over exaggerated.
It could be. Maybe then in the telling of it, it wasn't actually 50. And that's just, they took the brutality to a new level just to cause more pain and things like that. Yeah. Yeah. Perhaps. But I mean,
yeah.
So let me just for recap, because I think some people are probably like, I never saw this. And if you're new to this theory, it's something old Sir Ezra cooked up. And you know what? I have not seen anybody else talk about it. Just so you know, I have not, it's not something that I see a lot of people bring up. And if there's another theory out there and it's legitimate, please send it to me, because I was very proud of this. All right. I thought this was cool. It's almost like we had that moment where Matt and I figured out R plus L equals J, and we were like, has anybody else thought of this? And we go, it's
no,
like,
I know. Seriously.
It's like so everyone. It's so awesome. But that was like the start to it, which is cool. So in this theory, you pull up the character, Rhaenys Targaryen, and you look at in 280 AC, Rhaenys was born on Dragonstone. She is the daughter of Prince Rhaegar Targaryen and Elia Martell. And you even look at the clip art of her. She's got the Dornish skin. She's 3 years old in 283 when she is killed. Okay. Let's see. I mean, there's so many details. Like, why throw in the detail that she has a small black kitten that was named Balerion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So... after Rhaenys, okay, hold on, let me back up here. Tywin commanded the deaths of Rhaenys and Aegon to prove his loyalty to Robert Baratheon, although he himself claims to have been shocked at the brutality of their deaths. In Rhaenys' case, he believed Lord Chu tried to justify his savagery by claiming the girl kicked him and would not stop screaming. Let's see, could simply have offered a few sweet words to calm her down, and a pillow to suffocate her. Now, hear me out. There's a couple different ideas on this, right? Either he, because Tywin might, maybe they did just get away, and there were, it maybe Varys and Elia didn't try to put two fake children in with Elia, but maybe they showed up there, and where are Elia's children? Where are Rhaenys and where is Aegon? They're not here. So Tywin says, oh, crap. Either like Robert Baratheon is going to think I'm loyal to them in some way and I let the children go. Or I you know, like maybe they got out beforehand. And so he says, let's just go ahead and put two kids in here and kill them.
Right. It wouldn't be the first time it's happened in the series. Just go check out what Theon does with Bran and Rickon.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's literally the exact same.
Exact thing. Same thing. Exact same thing. And that's what George does. He puts an element in there and says, I've done it before. Like you've seen me do it. The obvious is the Miller's sons, and that we get that very clear. We know Bran and Rickon go on living. We see how they're living in secret, and we see what's happening. Why in the world would we not believe that Elia, within all of her power, and we see people smuggled out, Sansa gets out, right. Varys knows secret ways in and out. Are you kidding me? Varys allows Tyrion to go up and kill Tywin. It's not hard to believe that he smuggles out a two small children. And by the way, he was loyal. Seemingly, he was more loyal to the Targaryens than he was to Tywin. He was telling the Mad King, don't open your gates. Tywin is not your friend. He's going to come in here and kill you. That was the point, is that he felt like that was a friend he could trust. And...
look at young Griff. Young Griff is either A, the real deal, which means that the babe that's killed is a secret babe because it's not Aegon Targaryen, or young Griff is either a secret Blackfyre, or young Griff is just some random dude, in which case it's still a secret because he's just some random person, right? Who they're portraying Right. So there we have a legitimate secret identity, and no matter how you play it out, and that's kind of a thing where it's like, well, everybody has a secret identity. Well, if everybody has a secret identity, that means that it's done over and over again, which would then also mean that Ger will do these things over and over again, which means that Rhaenyra Targaryen, right? The young girl could also be somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Man, I'm just trying to find this So Spake Martin so bad, because I wanted to read it to you guys exactly.
The one where he says it, but yeah, I mean, yeah. Both of their deaths are made in a way, both children of Elia are described in ways that it's like, it makes it feel as if they're unrecognizable. Correct me if I'm mistaken on that, but it's, you know, Rhaenyra, she was stabbed, you know, this many times, and then his face was smashed against a wall, to where he was unrecognizable.
Matt, I'm going to redo this video. And I swear by the seven and by the freaking old gods.
Let's go.
If people don't start respecting this idea and this theory a little bit more, Aemon Targaryen. Jesus Christ, man. Let me just settle in here for a second, okay? Because I did just pull up the So Spake Martin, and this is because I had read that comment and I was like, oh, I don't remember exactly what George said. Let me read this to you. So someone asked the question, right? Aegon Targaryen, Rhaegar's son, is still alive as written in the books, right? It could be Fagon, it could be Young Griff, whatever you want to call him. As Matt just said, he's still alive. So could Rhaenys, his sister, be alive too? And the answers are all, everyone's just chiming in here saying no. I mean, it's just everyone's liking and saying, like, no, it's very well confirmed. George has flat out said that Rhaenys is definitely dead. And then they put the quote, right? They in their comment, they say Rhaenys is definitely dead. But then you read what George said, right? Quote, are Aegon and Rhaenys, Elia's children, well and truly dead? George, in reply, says, quote, all I have to say is that there is absolutely no doubt that little Princess Rhaenys was dragged from beneath her father's bed and slain. He doesn't say there is, why frame it like that? There's absolutely no doubt. Why not just say, no, that's what happened, right, Matt? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, why say it that way? All I have to say is there's absolutely no doubt that little Princess Rhaenys was dragged from beneath her father's bed and slain.
Yeah.
No doubt by who? I mean,
yeah.
She's alive.
Exactly. Ez is on it, man.
She's alive, man. She's alive. And she is Cirella Sand, okay? She's Cirella Sand, who is the missing, by the way, the missing Sand Snake that Dorne Martell cannot find. And he says, oh, she's up to some game. Everyone believes that Cirella Sand is Alaris.
Which is the riddle.
The riddle, the Sphinx, at the Citadel, a female, right, trying to become a maester, which is not allowed. She's pretending to be a boy. And when was Cirella Sand born? 280 AC. When was Rhaenys Targaryen born? 280 AC. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Very interesting. Alaris, the same age. And then on the freaking way, Aemon Targaryen is on his way, right? Jesus Christ. He's on his way down to the Citadel, and he says to Sam, the Sphinx is the riddle, right? Or something like that. That's a clue to all of us. That is a clue to all of us.
The princess who was promised.
The princess who was promised.
What if she's the princess?
She's alive. She is alive. And I am more. And by the way, I forget. This So Spake Martin was a long time ago. And I'm just saying, it's. You save the younger son, the babe, and not the. And to mutilate her, let me check on the exact. Does it say 50 times that she was stabbed? Let me just see. Because that's insane, Matt. That's excessive.
That's over excessive.
Yeah, his savagery by claiming the girl kicked him and would not stop screaming. And that's why Lorch did what he did. Yeah, freaking right, man. They had to cover them in a red Lannister cloak to better conceal the blood. They were covered in a cloak. That right there tells you, why add that much detail into it, Matt? Why, as an author, put all those details about the mutilation of the bodies, and then they're covered in cloak, and then your Tywin's worried about it. But that's why he wanted to prove to Robert that he got
half,
him.
Half a hundred thrusts.
For a small child, Matt? Insane. Mm-hmm. It's insane. And so she's alive. She is alive, and she is the Sphinx. She is freaking Alaris, and I'm sticking to that. I don't tell me I'm wrong. I'm so glad someone told me to go back and look at the So Spake Martin, where he said there is no doubt. People in the realm, they don't doubt it. We the reader, we shouldn't doubt it either, right? I mean, we don't want there to be, like, there's no doubt. She is dead. Well, look again.
Yeah, and then you have, so just look at Sir Armory Lork here, because according to a semi-canon source, which is the World of Ice and Fire, during the Rhaen Tellback Rebellion in 261, Sir Armory threw the last Lord Tellback, a three-year boy, down a well. Now, it's disputed whether this was done per the orders of Sir Tywin Lannister or without his knowledge. So
Yeah, why bring that up again?
Is this guy just going around killing kids and Tywin then has to cover it up? That does not seem like the kind of thing Tywin would do. So Tywin probably ordered it.
Yeah, and you know what though? But what I'm saying is, if
Tywin, not him throwing him down a well, but probably go take care of the kid too.
Exactly. But if Tywin does show up in the city and he orders them to be killed that way, it's to cover something up. Either that they were gone and he missed it and he doesn't want Robert Baratheon to think he's loyal, or they were put there in front of him and they were,
right. So he kills. Yeah. So Sir Armory Lark kills a three-year-old boy by throwing him down a well, and then murders a 3-year-old princess during the sack of King's Landing per the order of Tywin Lannister.
Something's up. Something is up.
It's just like the idea of, well, what happens if I don't do it? So he's got to fake it because he doesn't get the right girl.
How big of a deal?
But also, how many 3-year-olds are there running around? I mean, you just grab a random 3-year-old in the city, and then you make it seem like they're unrecognizable, right?
Yeah.
So that way, well, even Tywin can't tell. It could be more. Not that Tywin's trying to do it to cover it up because he doesn't have the right person. It could be that Armory Lork is trying to cover it up because he didn't get the right kid. He's like, well, if I just make it unrecognizable, then Tywin's like, well, okay.
Or was he paid by somebody to go back and tell Tywin some ridiculous story that he was kicked by a little girl? So it, part of right. the cover story, you know, whoever's trying to get the kids out of the city, is he in on it? Look a little closer at maybe his alliances and...
Right.
I'm telling you, man, the mysteries are in the sack of King's Landing. Like, who told Eddard Stark where the Tower of Joy is? Who got these children out of here, and why and they're now coming back again?
Well, you know, look at also here who he's doing this with. So Armory Lork is and Gregor Clegane are the ones that are, you have to go do this, right?
Yeah.
You have to go do this. So imagine if you're Armory Lork and you get there and there's not a girl there, and the person that you're doing this like sort of special mission with is Gregor Clegane. We've seen Gregor Clegane get upset that he lost a joust and literally cut his horse's head off.
Right, right.
I'm sure that he would just kill Armory Lork and be like, he's that kind of person where it's like, well, I mean, anytime we see him, he's just like killing people left and right. He would probably kill Armory Lork and be like, so Armory Lork might go get some other random girl and make it seem like he killed the right one just so he doesn't have to deal with Gregor Clegane. Because Gregor does not seem like he's going to go manipulate something to make it seem like it happened.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so, okay. And Lork also seems like the type of guy with all that history and the way, if you look at his demeanor in the series, a guy who's like, it's not worth me walking an extra 2 blocks to go actually find the right kid. Just grab any kid right now and let's do this. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like it's one or the other. Like, he's either worried about what the mountain's going to say or Tywin, or he just is too lazy to go do it and falls into this. Or he takes money. He's the type of guy who says, yeah, I'll take money to bring back a mutilated body and say, you know, I did it, or who cares? I mean, he just doesn't. Yeah, his feet. But I don't know if there's something about this. I'm looking at manticore. So his personal arms are a black manticore on a red field. So I was thinking about Dany and the manticore, her being attacked by the manticore from the assassin. Anyway, it's just a little interesting connection I'm trying to track down.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is that Armory Lork is killed, right? In a clash of kings. After the fall of Harrenhal, he's paraded naked before Roos and Bargo, pleading and sobbing. He's kicked into the bear pit to be killed by the bear inside. Arya is present to witness his death. The bear is all black like Yorn, and the bear tears Armory apart. But then he's literally mentioned.
Yes, he
is.
He's
mentioned in every book afterwards. He's mentioned in A Storm of Swords.
Mm-hmm.
Jaime finds a jawbone he believes is Armory Lork's, right? And then Prince Oberyn, this is when Oberyn comes to, you know, wanting revenge. And then Lord Tywin tells his son Tyrion, you know, his plan to blame all three of the deaths entirely on the deceased Armory to circumvent giving Sir Gregor over to Oberyn. So then they try to even cover that up. According to Tywin, Armory justified his brutal murder because she was kicking and screaming. Tywin then tells Oberyn that Armory acted on his own without orders to give favor for the new king. So there's just so much sort of like stuff going on here where they're trying to cover it up and make it seem, you know, there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on here.
Well, yeah. And so this is interesting, right? The Mountain is the one who kills Elia and Aegon. And then it was said that Rhaenys wasn't in the same room. Let me tell you something, Sir Matt. Okay. If King's Landing is getting raided and my children are in two separate rooms, I don't think so. If I'm going to be captured, I'm with my children. I mean, let me go look. What does it say?
You know, I will say that is one piece that is sort of interesting is if they do a baby swap, right?
Yeah.
Does Elia just willingly give her life up in this room with this other baby so that it's more believable? Mm-hmm. So that way her son can go on and live? Because why wouldn't Elia just obviously, you know, I think if you go over, you're going to recognize this is or isn't my baby.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, oh yeah.
So
sure.
Why is it that she doesn't or does or doesn't realize that this... So why is she in the room if you go down the route of Aegon, this false Aegon, right? Young Griff, let's say, is the real deal. What, regardless, it's not the correct baby. Does she know this? Why doesn't she try to leave? Why don't they try to get her out of there as well?
Yeah, Matt, hold on. There's too many details here. That's why we're looking at it, right? You don't put two children in two separate rooms unless there's a reason why. Just put them in the same room with their mother and they were all killed.
But when instead, a city's being sieged.
Yeah, exactly. And you know they have time, by the way. They have time. Especially where they're at, like the sack of King's Landing is happening. First, you're fighting probably the gold cloaks, and then you've got some white cloaks inside. The Mad King is still there, and he's got Elia nearby trying to keep Dorne loyal to him, all that kind of stuff. And you have, so it says that she, during the sack, that she, Rhaenys, went and hid underneath her father's bed, which was a floor above the nursery, right? And that's where Lorch found her. Come on now. Why add that extra layer as the author? Why write that in there unless you're going to do something with it? It's this extra detail that I don't know that is necessary unless there's something going on. So,
right. Yeah, I asked.
Which is why
I asked
people
him
say
after
Aegon or Young Griff. Yeah,
right.
Sorry.
I asked him afterward why it was required half a hundred thrusts to kill a girl of two or three. He said he said she'd kicked him and would not stop screaming. If Lorca had half the wits the gods gave a turnip, he would have calmed her with a few sweet words and used a soft sink pillow. The blood was in him. And so there Tywin even thinks he's stupid for it. Now, again, Tywin covers up sort of the Aegon part of this.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
Matt, I'm telling you right now, I'll go ahead and say it.
Tywin already thinks that the method he's doing is stupid. It seems to me, it does seem a little more likely that at least this one would be, we didn't get the right girl. And if Tywin already thinks he's stupid, did Tywin think he was stupid back then? Tywin probably already thought he was stupid for killing that other kid he didn't tell him to, if he didn't tell him to do it, right? And he just did it.
Yeah. Yeah, here's the thing, man. I'll just say it just to wrap it all up, all right? Because this is absolute, the whole Lorch's story, as he comes back and he's telling Tywin, whatever you want, it's complete bullshit. All right? He did not kill Rhaenys Targaryen, and she is alive, friends. You mark Sir Ezra's word. This is one of those, I hate to say this, because there's some crazy podcasts out there that believe certain theories, like, you know, Ned and Ishara and Jon Snow. So, okay? And they die on that sword every day, Matt. I will die on this sword that Rhaenys Targaryen is alive, my friend.
Well, you know, this is interesting. In the notes section, on the wiki, they sort of question some things and say there might actually be some sort of inconsistency. Assuming the Armory Lork was at least 15 years old during the Rhaen Tarbeck Rebellion, as he was already considered a knight. Remember, that's where he kicks the kid. He kicks the kid down the well. That would make him at least 37 years old during the sack of King's Landing. And this is unlikely to be in prime condition to scale the walls of Magor's Holdfast. Additionally, he would be 53 years old or older during the War of the Five Kings, and he is not mentioned to be an older man in his appearance in A Clash of Kings. This inconsistency might be why this incident was published in the Westerlands, was not included in the published Westerlands chapter of The World of Ice and Fire, talking about why they're questioning the semi-canon source of him kicking the kid down the well in the World of Ice and Fire.
So here's the thing. I think if you're George, or if you're, I don't know who's behind all that, the app, right? But if you want to make this, you give this guy a backstory or a history where, oh, he's done this before, that lulls us into thinking, yeah, this is him. He's just a crazy guy who likes killing children. Maybe not. I mean, why throw that extra detail in there if not to sell us further that he did really kill these children? I'm telling you, friends, I'm smelling something here, and it's foul. All right. It's crazy.
Okay. So. Well, all right, man. Hey, good stuff. As it's always good. Once we start diving down, we get to see some more thoughts, theories, especially in some of these characters.
Yeah.
Where like, you just like Lorch, just keep going down.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. Well, hey, friends, we will be back with what we'll do in the extended edition, since we went a little bit long there with that, that Raven. We will be talking, let me see here. Oh, we got some Loras Tyrell to talk about, and we also have, the colors green and black and some symbolism. So we'll do those in extended edition follow up. They'll also be available over on Patreon if you guys want those, really, really cool stuff. So be sure to check those out.
As well as Apple Premium, for those of you guys, yes, may have had some people sign up for that, which is super cool. Because again, you get access to all of the extended editions across all of, I guess, Matt and Ez Media, if you want to call it that. Yeah. Which includes Hyperspace, Matt and Ez Show, and Heroes of the Horn, in addition to Bend the Knee. So awesome. All right, guys, with that, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 65, Sansa 8 of A Clash of Kings.
If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you in a week, and remember that winter is coming.